Welcome to the Red Neck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events will help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Red Neck Dentist Podcast. So let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Yeah, let's get to it, for crying out loud. It's Wednesday, middle of the week, looking for some entertainment. Who knows? You might get it here. I don't know. Thanks for joining me here on Real Liberty Media. I really appreciate it when you join live. You can come to reallibertymedia.com, get in the chat room. You can ask questions or just banter or make fun or whatever. I'm here. So join in the conversation and let's have some fun. Man, I have some updates I want to get to real quick. Let's see where we are. Oh, first of all, I want to say this is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. All right, so here's some updates. You guys, I think, are going to like this. Well, some of it. Who knows? Number one, I have this problem with my knee. It's getting fixed August 10th. It happens to be a Wednesday, so I probably will do a show early or maybe Tuesday of that week. Who knows what? Or maybe if I get done early enough and I'm still all amped up on, you know, anesthetic drugs, maybe we'll do it and just have a little fun. Let me check levels here and make sure everything's cool before we go on. It looks like everything's okay. Good. Okay, the next thing is, I did get a little bit of feedback from the last show. Good feedback. And I think it was kind of needed for me that, I don't know if you guys noticed, but on the last show, I was talking about working on Saturdays, and I was talking about dentistry, and I was talking about how, I guess I almost came to a realization during the show that I was never going to fix everybody. Which I don't think I ever thought I was, but I kept thinking that I was going to have some profound effect on dental disease, even in my little community. And you know, when you start seeing that you're booked out for 6 months and you're solidly booked, like two columns of patients, and my next appointment is, well, probably November or December. That's already the end of the year. And I got news for people. You know, people always wait to use their insurance at the end of the year. Guess what? Middle of July is the end of the year because I don't have any more appointments. Well, soon I won't have any more appointments available. In fact, really soon I'm not going to have any more appointments available because I want to get to this. Monday, I signed my contract to go down to 3 days a week at work because of the realization I had when I was kind of doing the show and talking about, you know, all the stuff I was doing and how I was kind of looking forward to kicking back my schedule. And instead, what I did is somehow add another day by helping out these people in Salem, which is cool. I'm still going to do that. It'll just be better in a way because I'll only be working 3 days a week, and then one week out of the month, I'll work 4 days. And it'll be fine. It'll actually work out really good. But yeah, after my show on Saturday, I went into work on Monday, and I was like, yep, today's the day. I'm backing down. So I'm not 100% sure when I'm going to put that in place. The surgery I'm going to have on my knee is going to be August 10th. So I think probably September, I'm thinking. I'll kick back to 3 days a week. And, yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty excited about that whole change. And I don't, you know, I've had that contract, I don't know how long. You know, once we talk about something, the corporation and I talk about something, and I say, okay, you know, this is what I'd like to do, then they write up a contract and they put it, you know, they put it in the electronic format. And then, it's just sitting there waiting for me to sign it. And every day I would get a reminder, hey, you got a document here to sign. And I wasn't signing it because it was like, I don't know, man, I'm doing this 4 days, you know, thing, and I'm fine with it. But yeah, so, and actually when I opened it to sign it, it said it was almost ready to expire. So I think it's either 3 or 4 months it's been sitting there, and I finally did it. So that's kind of cool. I'm excited about that. I wanted to tell you guys, this is kind of funny. Like, I wanted to find out if there was a ranking for anarchist podcasts. So I went and looked, and then I started thinking how funny this is. Here's kind of a problem with anarchist podcasts, I guess, or maybe anarchists in general. And that is, like, we don't really want to join anything. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, that's kind of part of living a life of freedom and liberty, is that you don't really sign up for stuff. So even though people may love certain podcasts, you know, like anarchy podcasts, it's not like people are really going to sign up to support it, which is actually kind of cool, because that's exactly the point, is, hey, do your own thing, man. You know, live a life of liberty, live a life of freedom. And, you know, you can support people however you want to support people. And I think that's awesome. In fact, I'm going to tell you kind of a funny story. So my, Rochelle and I were heading to, we were in town, I don't know, yesterday, I think. Oh, yeah, yesterday. It was yesterday. Because I took yesterday off, man. I'd already had it for the week, and I only worked one day. Oh, God, that sounds horrible. But I had work Saturday, too, and, of course, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, so we had three kind of, not gigantic garbage bags, but three, let's say, I don't know, 30-gallon garbage bags full of returnable soda cans. And when we go to McMinnville, we always look for a couple of the, well, I'm just going to tell you. So Rochelle and I are driving through town, and we're like, hey, we got to find one of the bums we know. And I mean, that's just exactly how we said it. It was like, yeah, we only give our cans to bums we know. And I know how politically incorrect that would be on, you know, pretty much any other, you know, social media, whatever. But that's the reality, is like, here in the world, you know, we don't play that game. It's like, you know, I'm not going to, you know, call you houseless. That's the big thing here in Oregon, is we don't have homeless people. We have houseless people. And who knows how long that term will be around before they, you know, change it to something stupider. But yeah, so, you know, we did find one of the two guys that we usually see, and gave them, you know, ask them if they wanted these bags of cans. And sure enough, you know, they did, because they go stand in line. And, you know, we have these machines outside. I don't know if you guys do, but, you know, so you stand at this machine and feed the cans in one at a time, and it gives you a receipt, and you take it inside, and then the company, you know, store gives you however much money it says. So sure enough, these guys, this guy was really happy to you know, get the cans, and it was going to buy him some food or whatever for the day. I don't even care, you know. I didn't have to stand in line with all those cans. So, yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And actually, one of the guys, actually, he has a bicycle with a bike cart that he pulls behind it, and he's got a sign on it that says the Can Man. And he's a pretty nice guy. I mean, he really is. Actually, the two guys we usually try and help out, they're both pretty nice guys. One of them used to work at one of the gas stations in town. And he worked there for like 10 years. So I'm kind of surprised to see he's having trouble, but I talked to him a little bit, and he's had a lot of medical issues, and I don't know, just, you know, probably the COVID thing drove him out of there, and, you know, now he's suffering a bit, but I don't think he's houseless. But he does beg all the time. Anyway, so he makes a little bit of a living begging. Hey, so you guys probably thought, if you listened to, I think, maybe the last two shows, I talked about having an abortion travel agency. And I bet, like, even I thought it was ridiculous when I was talking about it. I was being somewhat sarcastic about it. But I got to share this story with you. This is the craziest thing. No, it's not. I mean, now I'm really getting to the point where, like, it's almost sad because you think this stuff is just comedy, and it's not. It's actually real life stuff going on, and people actually doing ridiculous things. Like this, who is that? Was that some professor from, who knows? UCLA, some California college, who was being questioned, and she actually said that some men can get pregnant, and I was just like, oh, God, yeah. But, I mean, thank God that, like I don't have some kind of social media presence that would allow people to, you know, cancel me or whatever, because, you know, this senator who was talking to her, she just like went after him like he was going to be the cause of some suicides because he wasn't identifying these transgender people, that he was being transphobic, and that some of these people were probably going to commit suicide because he wasn't recognizing that they were people. And yet she believes that some of those men can get pregnant, which hasn't happened yet. Doubt that it will seriously ever happen. But oh yeah, but back to my point. So I was talking in previous episodes about how Oregon is a sanctuary state for abortions, and they're actually they're going to pay people's expenses while they're here getting an abortion, and then you have a bunch of companies who are paying travel expenses for their employees to get abortions. And I was making the point that, you know, you could actually literally make a travel agency that, you know, would plan these trips for women coming to get abortions. And, you know, you could kind of plan it just right so that they could take time off work, you know, 2 weeks or whatever, and they could come out, and Oregon's going to pay expenses. So they would get put up in who knows where they're going to put these people. But, you know, if you had a travel agency and you coordinated all that, the women could come, stay for like 2 weeks, who knows what it is, you know, do some sightseeing and maybe tour some wineries and either go to the mountains and, you know, snow ski or go to the beach, or, you know, cycle, or any of the great outdoor activities we have here in Oregon. And then they go get their abortion, and then, you know, they travel back and they're done. And I, you know, I was totally being kind of sarcastic about it. But look what's on the way. This California doctor wants to create a floating abortion clinic in the Gulf of Mexico so that women in southern states can evade pro-life laws and obtain abortions at sea. Wow. That's pretty damn amazing if you ask me. And kind of like, see, it's right in line. So now, I mean, you know, maybe this doc is going to, you know, is going to, I don't know how they'll do it. Like, I mean, if they tie up at the dock, you know, at the boat moorage place, you know, maybe they would be, you know, fall under some jurisdiction. I don't know. But so maybe they're going to have people like, you know, ferry the patients out to the boat because, I don't know, maybe they have to be so many miles offshore. Maybe they're going to be in international waters. I mean, I don't know what. But here, I mean, so some other doc is already kind of on it. Like, hey, we're going to provide abortions at sea for all the women in these border states that, you know, aren't going to allow abortions. We're just going to take them on a boat offshore and do their abortions. I was shocked. Let's see. Did we cover? Yeah, I think we got all the updated stuff. Oregon has a new invasive species. This sucks. We happen to have some ash trees on our property, and there's this critter that's kind of made its way across the United States. It's from, it's not from the United States. I was trying to think of where in the heck this is from. It's from Asia somewhere. I don't know. I'll find out. It's called the Emerald Ash Borer. Oh, it says native to Asia, has left widespread destruction in its path across the U.S., so its arrival on the West Coast concerns biologists. The Oregon Department of Agriculture calls the emerald ash borer the most destructive forest pest in North America. Oh, that's kind of interesting. According to a 2022 study in the academic journal Sustainability, since it was first found near Detroit, Michigan in 2002, the beetle has killed more than 8 billion native ash trees. So, you know, pretty much the ash trees are going to die, right? And so this biologist says ash trees are an important part of the ecosystem nationwide, and when they die, there are ripple effects, according to the University of Illinois Extension Service. The death of ash trees reduces property values for homeowners, creates losses in timber, reduces important wildlife habitat, and increases heating and cooling costs, and increases stormwater runoff. Now, here's what I think is interesting, is whenever, you guys know, I have a degree in biology, I'm a dentist, I have some knowledge of nature and stuff. Whenever I see a story like this, I'm always thinking to myself, okay, well, so then what do we do now? Because we know what's going to happen. Matter of fact, I saw a newscast here in Oregon as they picked up on this story of this emerald ash borer beetle. And some biologist was out there standing next to the river, and he was one of the rivers, probably the Willamette River, the McKenzie River, one of the big rivers here, Columbia River. And he was talking about how the ash trees create some shade for, you know, parts of these, you know, river systems, and how that those ash trees being removed will cause the temperature of those waters to warm up. And as they run down into the I'm reading a comment now, I'm confused. No, as the water runs down into bigger and bigger, you know, rivers, that it's also going to increase the temperature of those rivers. And his point was it's going to affect the spawning salmon population because the waters are going to become so warm. And I'm thinking to myself, number one, if you believe in evolution for one thing, The fish that normally spawn in those rivers, as long as it isn't a drastic temperature change so that you don't have a few generations of fish that could get used to it, really there's not going to be a problem. Like when Mount St. Helens erupted here in Washington in 1980, you know, the Cowlitz River, there was a huge flow of debris and water down the Cowlitz River and, you know, out the waterways to the ocean. And yeah, that was a drastic, sudden change that probably killed a lot of spawning fish and a lot of habitat where fish would spawn. And yeah, it was probably very silty and had a lot of ash content for a number of years. But you know, those fish have returned. I mean, they're going to be fine. They are fine. The point is, so what do you do? Like, so now do you spend a crap ton of money trying to eradicate this beetle that apparently has done, well, what did it say? Like 8 billion trees, 8 billion native ash trees in North America so far. Like, so now that it's here on the coast, you think you're going to stop it? And then looking back, it was discovered in 2002, so it's been 20 years. Okay, well, what has happened to the environments where those ash trees were destroyed? Like, what has taken place? You know, we're very creative. We're very capable of solving these problems. I don't think talking about it necessarily solves it. It's like, okay, if it's been here for 20 years and we've seen this happening, and who knows, maybe it happened in Asia before this beetle got here. By the way, it's really kind of a good-looking beetle. You know, well, what have you done to fix the problem or not? Like, maybe just let nature take its course. Okay, what's going to fill the gap where this ash tree has left, you know, goes missing? Nature's pretty incredible. It's been taking care of itself for millennia. So, you know, probably, like, unless we interfere, probably it'll work itself out. You know, the fish will figure out how to adapt to the changing temperature in the water. Have to get a drink. Hang on. Oh, that's so good. You know, and then the local environment too. Okay, so if the ash tree is going to go, you know, in Oregon and Washington, well, I can't really speak for either one of these states, but I do know for a fact that Oregon is, you know, reforest the land that they harvest. So they're really good at planting trees. You know, they're really good at making sure that the next crop, you know, 40 and 50 years down the road is already planted, ready to go, so that they can keep their industry going. So I don't know, ash trees probably don't grow very rapidly. Obviously, I mean, they probably don't just shoot up like crazy. So, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to plant more ash trees? Are you going to find an ash tree that's more resistant to this beetle? You're going to find another tree that will kind of fill the void of the ash tree, you know, and what have you done in these states where it's been around for 20 years and it's wiped out 8 billion native ash trees? Oh. Yeah, how do you get ready now? Okay, now you know it's here. It was actually discovered in Forest Grove, and it was, I don't know, some biologist guy, or he noticed a group of ash trees that didn't look so good, that looked like they had some damage and looked like they had this certain marking, like a half circle cutout, that he knew was from this emerald ash borer beetle. And so he went over there with his kids, and they started looking around. Within minutes, he found one of these beetles. So then he kind of told the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, or Department of Ag, hey, this boar beetle is here. This is where we found it. Well, it turns out Scott, our son, actually had a picture of one he took in Willamina, which is only 8 miles away from here. So, yeah, we pretty much know our ash trees are probably doomed. What are we going to do about it? Probably nothing for a while. We'll see what happens. I did notice, this is kind of interesting, so I did notice a new insect trap on my ride. If you guys watch, maybe this week I'll make a point of pointing out this insect trap. Because I just noticed it in like the last week. So I'll bet it has something to do with this ash borer beetle. Although sometimes they put traps up. I mean, there was some moth they were looking for years ago and they had those traps up. And hell, you know, they're probably going to be looking for murder hornets to show up wherever. But anyway, yeah, interesting. Ash borer beetle is going to cause us some trouble. But it's just kind of funny to me that how everything kind of is like this crazy doomsday scenario. It's always like the doomsday scenario, you know, we're not going to survive. The trees are going to die. The fish are going to die. And then we're going to die. You know, or if the bees go missing, we're all going to die. But yet it's never happened before in the history of the earth. Well, I'm exaggerating. I'm sure there's been times when a certain species, like naturally, no, I don't even know. I think the only time you could really point to a real disaster is when the dinosaurs died off. Yeah, I'm probably wrong about that. But let's just say this. There's never been a cornerstone species that has died. Because if that had happened, then the whole rest of the ecosystem would have failed. Because if you listen to the stories about how if bees die, man's going to die, you know, because it's a cornerstone species. Well, here's the problem. Yeah, we are all going to die eventually. We may die out as a species. You would hope so eventually. I don't know. But if that cornerstone species had ever died in the past, well, we wouldn't all be here, would we? So it's one of those things, as a biologist, I always had a hard time buying. It's like, okay, well, yeah, you can talk about it. You know, you can be philosophical about it and theorize about it, but point to one example where that has happened. Kind of like the Yellowstone caldera. And everybody always constantly freaking out that the Yellowstone caldera, the volcano is going to blow again because it's due. And I say, okay, so where in history has a volcano that has blown itself completely to pieces, there's nothing left of it, show me in history where that has happened and then the volcano erupted again so magnificently that it destroyed half of the earth? Because if you believe the stories about Yellowstone blowing, they say it's going to wipe out most of North America. Well, okay, show me where that has happened in the past. Because I don't believe it. I just don't. Oh, so yeah, the Emerald Ash Borer beetle. It's our new problem. Oh, I got it. I want a. I want to talk about this arming yourself a little bit. Kind of my survival tip of the week. You've heard me talk about it before, but I'm telling you, times are getting crazy. And most of us aren't capable of fighting for our lives. Now, I'm not saying that to put anybody down. I'm saying that because people are becoming really violent and they're picking out certain targets. You know, I studied martial arts for some years and I felt really good when I was studying it. And I really felt like I didn't care what size anybody was. I was probably going to survive any kind of physical battle. But now being 64, I'm like, hey, I'm not wasting my energy. Like, somebody starts, you know, screwing around, I'm either shooting them or stabbing them, one of the two. I don't have the energy for it anymore. I don't probably have the strength for it. With a bum knee, I'm definitely, you know, at a little bit of a disadvantage. Now, when I say arm yourself, I'm just saying arm yourself with something. You do not have the strength, more than likely, to survive somebody who has violent intent. I have stories from, you know, this past week, this Olympic volleyball player brutally attacked in Los Angeles. Olympic silver medalist Kim Glass said she was attacked over the weekend by a homeless person in downtown L.A. Okay, number one, don't live in L.A. She was struck by a metal pipe the man was wielding. Okay, metal pipe. Somebody beat you with a metal pipe. Yeah, you can shoot and kill him. As long as you feel an imminent threat to your life, yeah, you may get arrested. Yeah, you may go to jail. But guess what? You'll be alive to do those two things. You know, and who knows how it'll play out after that. But you'll be alive to find out how it's going to play out after that. This old man at a train stop, I don't know if you saw that. 82-year-old man dies after being punched, kicked repeatedly in unprovoked attack at Portland bus stop. Oh, bus stop. I said train, because metro is the same. It's buses and trains. Yeah, for no reason. I mean, oh, there was a guy beat by a highway cone. Beat to death with a highway cone by some teenagers. I guess they were just out having a good time, okay? And God forbid you get too old that you can't, like, pull the trigger on a gun or you can't hold a gun. But dang it, man. You should have something. They have tactical walking sticks. I have a tactical walking stick. It's 5 segments. Each segment has a different attachment inside. So if I unscrew one segment, there's either a knife or a saw or a compass or something, a screwdriver. Like, each segment has, and they're all removable. I can pop out and change whatever implements I want. And that walking stick is freaking heavy. So each segment is about 1 foot. So it's a 5 foot tall tactical walking stick that would do some damage. It's like an oversized billy club. Mace, pepper spray, wasp spray, a siren. I mean, have something and always be aware of your surroundings. People are just looking for targets, man, and you can be a target so easily. I have a handgun that I carry almost all the time. I'm always armed. One of the handguns I carry is pretty damn small. It's small for a reason. Doesn't take up a lot of space. It's easy to handle. It would be easy to point in almost any direction if it's in my hand. Even if somebody had me in a bear hug from behind, I could still probably manage to fire off a round. And sometimes that's all you need to do is fire off a round, but don't make that mistake. Like, if you feel your life is threatened, you need to kill somebody. For a couple reasons. One is to save your life, and two is to save future people's lives. And yeah, I'm not really, like, joking about it. I mean, I hate violence to other people, and it's the reason that I decided to start carrying, arming myself years ago. I think from the time I was 18, I have carried a firearm. because I didn't want any violence happen to anybody around me, any undue violence happening to, I didn't want anybody to be abused. I didn't want to be in a position where I couldn't stop it. And the one thing that will stop any of that stuff is a firearm. 100% firearm in the right hands is going to stop abuse or violence. So think about it, man. It's becoming a crazier and crazier world. And yeah. Getting ugly out there. You know, you're just walking along and somebody decides to beat you to death with a highway cone. Now, one thing is, yeah, who knows what was going on there. But the guy was out late at night, the old man that got beat to death with a highway cone. I'm thinking to myself, dang, man, why were you out there? And who knows? I mean, maybe he was homeless. Maybe he was out for a stroll. You should be able to go out for a stroll if you want to go out for a stroll. But today, man, better be ready. All right, moving on. I wanted to cover some funny, stupid, fake news that's no longer fake. Fulton County still can't explain its 2020 election results. This is in Georgia, is it? Yes, Georgia State Election Board. It's kind of funny, so I'm going to just give you the highlights here. So this Fulton County had to verify its election results. And they did that. They verified their election results. But one of the things that came out of it was they couldn't find, 17,000 votes. And they literally just said, yeah, we verified the count, but we can't find these 18,000 votes. You know, and the funny thing is, this January 6th committee thing keeps saying that Donald Trump, was pushing this lie that the election wasn't stolen. And the farther away we get from the election, the more we see how stolen this election was. But man, they just keep pushing that narrative and ignoring any of the facts that have come out since then. All of the stories that have come out since then, the investigations, all of it. They just completely ignore it. And still say it was just, you know, that Trump was just crazy making stuff up. Man, I hope that guy doesn't get elected again. I'm just telling you, I don't know what's going to happen in the next 2.5 years. Something's going to happen for sure. We're going to know the truth soon. But, you know, I hear people just jumping on the Trump bandwagon. I see it in these social media posts every day and some of the people that I listen to on podcasts, and they're like, hey, you know, if Trump runs, I'm going to vote for him. And I try and send them a message or email or make a comment on their podcast, if they allow comments, and say, hey, man, don't forget, Trump was the one who started all this, like with the vaccinations and masking up and, you know, listening to Fauci. And yeah, he's not the good guy that you necessarily think he is. It's time for somebody. I mean, DeSantis would be awesome. DeSantis said, hey, screw all you and all your stupid rules and laws. We're not doing that. And he's continued to hold that line even against other stuff like education and, the whole Disney, LGBTQ plus whatever stuff. And, he's much more in line with freedom and liberty than Trump was. But Trump was a good businessman, I guess, as far as the country goes. I mean, good God, look at where we are now. 9.1% inflation in the United States. It's like a new record again. Well, you listen to the Dems, everything's fine. Oh, you know why? Because they want us to move into this electric vehicle economy. That's what they want us to do. Let me just finish one more thought here. Oh, yeah, this story, this is crazy as hell. Like, does anybody, I'm going to tell you what this is about, maybe if it comes up. Yeah, it did. You got to go. All right, the numbers behind Pennsylvania's turmoil over transgender women in prison. Oops, I got a cough. Hang on. All right. Almost 200 biological males behind bars in Pennsylvania's state prisons say they identify as women, and a small number of them are seeking a transfer to women's prisons. Like, does anybody have any doubt how this is going to turn out? Especially because some of the ones who are requesting a transfer to women's prisons are in prison for sexual assault. But we'll see how woke Pennsylvania is soon enough. Because, you know, if they do it, there's going to be a price paid. And I think then, you know, somebody will probably have some ability to sue because how stupid this is. But who knows? Maybe these trans people will file a suit to get transferred into a women's prison. And yeah, we're going to have to deal with all of that eventually. Oh my goodness. Crazy, right? Yeah, let's transfer people who are sentenced on sexual assault charges. Let's put them right in there with the ones who they prefer to sexually assault. Because they identify as women, so I guess it would be woman on woman assault. Don't think so. But, crazy world. Well, let's look at the wonderful world of electric vehicles, shall we? So there's so many things that have been going on with electric vehicles lately. And I mean, people are really not buying electric vehicles and not even suggesting that they're going to buy an electric vehicle in the future, because I guess one of the biggest drawbacks is they don't like the fact that there aren't enough charging stations. Which is kind of crazy because, you know, we have this tremendous push to get these charging stations everywhere. And then I guess, you know, everybody thinks that that's going to be free, and it's already not free. And it's probably not going to be free for any significant length of time, if at all. Because, I mean, electricity is getting more and more expensive. And we're taking out some of the most effective ways of producing electricity. You know, and trying to make it solar and wind power. And, yeah, the price of electricity is going up and the demand is going up, and we're not able to meet the demand now. And we're actually going to be taking power plants out. Like, even in Oregon, they were talking about removing some of the lower dams on the Snake River that are hydroelectric dams, and they want to take them out because the salmon spawning thing, you know, it's like, we're not getting enough salmon to spawn upriver. Well, they are, but, you know, the environmentalists would have you believe that they're not. And it's always a good argument, you know, how many salmon are getting hurt going up the fish ladder, or how many salmon are not able to go up the fish ladder. So, yeah, why not? In a time where there's already a shortage of power, yeah, let's just remove some more power and then tell everybody to buy an electric car. And, yeah, people are already turned off by it. It's like, yeah. Oh, there was even somebody. Let me see who was that. Oh, this is great. So this journalist took a road trip in electric car, spends more time charging than sleeping, now says gas smells so sweet. So Wolf wrote that she plotted a meticulous route using an app that showed public chargers along the 2,000-mile round trip route. Most of the chargers, however, were only level 2, which means that it would take 8 hours for a full charge. Fast chargers can get the car to 80% of its full charge in roughly half an hour. And that's still longer than stopping for gas. So can you imagine? You're going to go, now there's some controversy about this too, but let's say the car says it'll do 200 miles on a full charge. Okay, well that 200 miles is on a flat road, not running air conditioning or fans or radio or media or I forget what, lights, like flat out only flat rolling, that's it. And it doesn't even actually do that because they have some rules. Let me see if I can find these rules. Oh, yeah. EVs do worse than advertised on the highway for a number of reasons. For starters, electric motors are far more efficient in stop-and-go driving conditions than during highway driving, partially because of the regenerative braking. Electric vehicles use the friction caused when you slow your car down to recharge the battery. Braking doesn't happen much during highway driving, however, which is why the advertised range drops precipitously. It says, well, if you drive a normal cruising speed with the air conditioning on, the media system doing its stuff, and the heater making you snug, it's a drain on the battery that the manufacturer didn't figure in when calculating the vehicle's range numbers, because they don't have to. Like, they just have to tell you, you know, what the range would be with just driving. That's it. No air, no lights, no media, no nothing. Just going. That's it. So basically, all of these cars that they're trying to push on the American public suck. Like, they suck. So you go to, you know, they have all these charging stations that take 8 hours to charge to a full charge. And they have very few of the rapid charging stations that will take you to 80% in an hour. What did it say? Fast chargers 80% in roughly half an hour. So you'd be stopping for half an hour to get 80%. But then that 80% isn't going to take you 80% of the mileage that the range that they say, because the range is completely false also. She said, overall, Wolf wrote, she spent 16 hours sleeping during the trip compared to 18 hours waiting to charge, spread over 14 charges. So what she did, where did she go? She went from Well, let's say she went from the Northeast to New Orleans. That's kind of what I'm thinking. It was roughly a trip like that. Oh, yeah, so this test is called the Worldwide Harmonized Light Vehicles Test Procedure. My God. Pretty funny. Yeah, she said it was a nightmare. She said even she pulled into some, I forget what car she had, but she would pull into, let's say it was Nissan. And she would pull into the Nissan dealers that said that they would have these charging stations. And sometimes the helpers couldn't even find the freaking charging cord. Like, you know, they had supposedly somebody told them, but nobody ever uses it. And yeah, they had trouble finding it. And it was a big pain in the ass. EVs cost significantly more than internal combustion vehicles. For one thing, the average price of a new electric vehicle was $64,700. Okay, let's just round it off, $65,000. That's nearly 2.5 times the average price of a new compact car, which is about $27,000. almost twice the average cost of a new compact SUV, which is $33,000-$34,000, and 52% more expensive than the average sports car at $42,000-$43,000. And then there are the fires. For the reports, tires on EVs wear out more quickly because the damn batteries are so heavy. Now, that's kind of hard to believe. Because I think, you know, they've been making cars lighter and lighter all the time. You have aluminum framing, aluminum siding, aluminum everything. With a lot of built-in safety features so that when your car hits something, it, you know, all the pieces fly off and hopefully you survive. But, electric vehicles, the batteries are freaking heavy. Like, really freaking heavy. And apparently it's like a lot of wear and tear on the tires. So, let's see what else. The electric battery driving a Tesla needs a lot of lithium. 22 pounds, according to Samanth Subramanian, writing in Quartz magazine. And over 117 pounds of lithium ore have to be dug to get that amount of lithium. So what is that, 5 to 1? Yeah, so 5 times as much ore needs to be mined to produce 22 pounds of lithium for, it says, the electric battery driving a Tesla. That's just one battery of a Tesla, and I think they have several batteries. And I did a show a few months ago. I was talking about how much lithium there was in this one certain mine. They predicted it would run out within, I don't know, 2 or 3 years if Musk. So it was a mine I think Musk was going to buy, but they knew that the amount of lithium in that one mine would only produce however many cars for like 3 years, and it wouldn't even come close to producing the number of vehicles that the federal government wants on the road. Of course, they want us all to have an electric car. But the news is that those resources are extremely limited. Current lithium ore mining can't produce 90 to 95% of what will be needed. Crazy. The industry also suffers from up and down pricing, and because 81% of the mining is in Australia and Chile, there are concerns about supply chain. Duh. There is a mine somewhere in the United States. It was either Utah, Nevada, somewhere like that, because I was kind of reading the story about like the rights to this mine and who was looking at buying it. Examples of environmental concerns about lithium mining include toxicity, apparently resulting in deaths of fish, cows, and yaks near a mine in China, draining of the water supply in the lithium triangle covering sections of Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile, and contamination of streams in Argentina, according to Wired magazine. Like any mining process, it is invasive. It scars the landscape. It destroys the water table. And it pollutes the earth and the local wells. This isn't a green solution. It's not a solution at all, says Guillermo Gonzalez. He's a lithium battery expert from the University of Chile. And he was talking in Wired magazine in 2009. An editorial last year in Nature was critical of the large amount of water and energy needed for lithium mining, coupled with working conditions for miners, some as young as 7 years old. You know, I've said for over a year now, if you're driving an electric vehicle, I hope you understand who mined all that stuff. Where was it mined? How much damage was done to the earth? And do you feel good about your electric vehicle? How many kids probably died or were maimed working in mines so that you could feel good about driving your electric vehicle? They don't know. No, and nobody talks about it. I mean, you don't hear this stuff. You don't hear, you know, you don't hear the feds talking about, hey, You know, we're going to be buying this lithium from, well, not producing it here in the United States because, you know, it's so caustic to the environment. You don't hear them talking about that. They just keep talking about, you know, we all got to have electric cars. You got this moron in Washington State, Jay Inslee. He wants, you know, he wants all electric vehicles in his government, the state government, in just a few years. He has no idea. Nobody tells these people the truth, and they don't care to hear the truth. They only want to hear the line. You know, what's the line right now? You know, the green economy, the green energy vehicles we're going to have, and what are they going to do? Look. It's so limited, even right this minute. If you could produce, well, whatever the limit is on what we can mine right this minute and create the vehicles right this minute, you don't have the electricity to charge and run those vehicles. You just don't. I guess that's what Kamala Harris was saying today when she said, you know, we're investing in transportation. Okay, for what? Well, it's for you because you're not going to be driving a fossil fueled car. And, you know, we don't have the energy to charge up all these electric vehicles that we're talking about. So we're just going to make these, you know, big metro, trains or buses, then you can ride them. Because there won't be enough energy for everybody to go around. So what we'll do is, we'll cut off the energy to your house so we can charge up our buses overnight, so that we can run them and you can get on the bus and take that to work and bring that home. And oh yeah, but don't arm yourself because we're not going to allow you to have a gun on the bus while you're going into the big city in amongst all the violence because we don't have a police force or let's say an armed security force, public or private, to protect you, and we're not going to allow you to do it yourself. But yeah, but we want you to go to work, you know, and keep working and keep paying the taxes so we could keep pretending we're creating this wonderful green energy solution for the world, you know, when pretty much nobody else is really doing it. I mean, you know, overseas, they've already backed off. They're like, hey, we're going to use natural gas. We're going to start pumping oil. We are going to turn on some nuclear power plants or start up some nuclear power plants because this not having power thing sucks. We don't want to do it anymore. Yeah, go without power for a bit. See how you like that. Let's see, probably winter time I might have lost power once this year. Did I break out the generator this year? I don't know. But it was fossil fuel generator, not a, you know, solar power, not wind power, you know, it was fossil fuel. Gasoline, man. What else do I have? Oh, so that review, I'm going to post that review, that'll be in the show notes. Because it is a great review, and maybe the other thing, the trip that's involved where the woman took the trip. Hey, I just want to tell you, if you're going to listen to the podcast later, you can find it on Real Liberty Media. But I was kind of doing a review the other day, and I actually looked to see what all sites that our podcast is on. My podcast is on, the Redneck Dennis Podcast. Is on Spotify, it's on Google, it's on Stitcher, it's on iHeartRadio, it's on Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Pocket Cast, Deezer, Listen Notes, Player FM, and Podcast Index. And I actually submitted it for Pandora, which I had forgotten about along the way. It should be on Pandora soon, but we would, of course, appreciate it if you come and listen to the show live on at Real Liberty Media. And join the conversation at reallibertymedia.com. We're always happy to have you here. And see you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.